nurse impersonators, child sleep habits, phone camera medicine, and we'll take a look at fluid volume deficit. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week and remind all of you that we are available on the web, too. You can get this in a lot of different ways and get the show downloaded to an MP3 player like an iPod or a Zune device. You can also, of course, listen anytime you want. Live over at the website, just click on the play button there on the site, listen to the most recent episode, or scroll down and go back and listen to past episodes, all available over at nursingshow.com. You'll also find links to everything we talk about there, so it's easy to follow up and get additional information about any of the topics and news items covered here on The Nursing Show. I especially want to welcome a lot of new and prospective nursing students that are checking out the show. We get a lot of nursing students this time of year as they're a few weeks away from starting nursing school or going back to nursing school. And I just want to welcome all of you and encourage you to listen to the show, check out the back episodes, and get in touch with me here at The Nursing Show, because I would be happy to feature a tip of the week or look at a segment for you to help you study and prepare for nursing school. It's one of the things that I try to do here on the show. We all need to review materials, but for some of us, we may be learning some of this stuff for the first time. So we want to help out in any way we can. You can reach me here at The Nursing Show by sending emails in to comments@nursingshow.com, and I will get that email and get back to you. I return every email I get, so please send those emails in here to comments@nursingshow.com. And of course, you can always comment on things over at The Nursing Show blog over at nursingshow.com. Time to jump into this week's news, and I'll start off this week's news with a look at an article I found out of Oregon. This is from the website mailtribune.com, and it's an article about two people that had been charged recently for impersonating nurses. Nursing board investigators found these two individuals had presented themselves as nurses. One had a website that portrayed the woman as a licensed psychiatric nurse with a history in clinical psychology and was advertising services on Craigslist as a psychiatric nurse. Also, another individual had used the nursing license of a former spouse to try to license an adult foster home. And this is, of course, not acceptable. These people represent nursing in a poor way. First of all, they aren't nurses, and they aren't going to be able to provide competent nursing care. And second of all, we need to make sure that we're following up on hiring of new nurses for facilities or for jobs, and that we make sure that we're verifying that their licenses are valid. Now, this doesn't seem to be a huge problem. It's not something I see crop up on a regular basis, but it is something that we should be aware of, especially in today's economic climate, where people are maybe inclined to do something a little shady to try to get a job. And this may appear to be a way to get into a career path that isn't as likely to be cut as we might see in other jobs. So this is something that we should be aware of. It's something we should keep our eyes open for. And if we know that someone is misrepresenting themselves as a nurse, we should contact our local state board of nursing and get them involved in the process. Now, I'm curious because I haven't really run into anything like this recently, and I wonder if it's something that you've seen occur in other locations. Is this something that you see as a problem or that's something you've run into before? I'd be interested in hearing back from you on the comment line. You can send in emails to comments@nursingshow.com or leave a comment directly over in the show notes for this episode. I'd like to hear if this is a problem that you think is very common. because I haven't seen much about it. I cover a lot of news for a lot of different healthcare fields, and it's much more common in my experience to see someone misrepresenting themselves as, for instance, a police officer or a firefighter, EMT, paramedic, or something like that, but not necessarily misrepresenting themselves as a nurse. Next up in the news is a story about sedentary children and sleep aids. Now, obviously, we talk about obesity as a problem in our pediatric population, in fact, in most of our population. We also talk a lot about some child issues, child care issues, and child health. And one of the things that helps children and a lot of people stay healthy is getting adequate sleep. I found an article over at medicalnewstoday.com looking at a recent study in the Archives of Disease in Childhood. And this particular article found that for every hour of the day that children are inactive, it adds approximately 3 minutes to the time it's going to take for them to fall asleep. Now, for anybody who's a parent of children of any age, sometimes bedtime is a difficult part of the day. I think that anyone that's had experience with kids would understand that. So I think we also understand that when kids are more active, they are going to be able to sleep better. Their sleep patterns are more normal. They find it easier to fall asleep, and they also find it easier to get a full night's sleep. They don't awake in the middle of the night as frequently. And that's just common sense when you think about it. There are many, many benefits to regular exercise and to an active lifestyle, and good and healthy sleep patterns is just one of them. Our bodies like to be active and energized and looks forward, I think, in some capacity to those times when it can rest, and it uses those times much more efficiently when it has had an active day. So this particular study looks at that specifically, and I think that this is another article that you can put in your bag of resources when you're talking to parents about their children and maybe talking to a parent who's having trouble with a child who's not going to bed well. You can pull this article out and point to it and let them know that, you know, if their child is more active throughout the day, their child will fall asleep better and faster. And this is something that is going to be of benefit to parents of every age group of child, from infants all the way up through teenagers. I know my teenage children are much better sleepers when we're in the midst of their sports season. And we take breaks periodically between seasons, usually about 4 to 6 weeks between different sports that they play. And I find that they don't want to go to bed as early. They're not as rested throughout the course of the day on those times when they aren't actively practicing for their different sports. And so I find that that's something that I run into quite frequently. And I always point out to them, you know, you're going to sleep better when you go to practice today. So I think this is something that it's interesting that this study has kind of quantified this process, and it's going to be something that we can follow up on with our patients and their families to assist in them. And of course, I think that this can be easily taken out of the realm of pediatric sleep habits and can be added to adult sleep habits. Adults who are more active are going to sleep better. I think there's no problem extrapolating the information from this study and applying it to the adult population in this particular instance. Finally, a story I found on camera phones. And, you know, everybody has a camera phone now. Everybody's carrying a phone around with them that can take still pictures or video, and then can upload or email those pictures or video to someone else. And I'm interested in how many of you have had patients send you photographs via email or something like that to assist you in making a determination on whether they need to come into the office or go to the hospital. This might be an interesting diagnostic tool when it can be applied to taking care of patients remotely. Telemedicine is going to become a bigger and bigger part of our healthcare system here in the U.S. so that we can alleviate overcrowding, reduce costs. All of those things are very important. And having any ability to visualize some problem from a remote location would certainly benefit that. So If you are thinking about this, there's an article, again, I found over at medicalnewstoday.com, looking at some different ways that camera phones are helping physicians diagnose uncommon problems. And this is from a study from doctors in Norway, where taking photographs or video of unusual symptoms, even using an ordinary camera phone, can be helpful when those symptoms are intermittent and don't necessarily cooperate and present themselves in the middle of an examination. And we've all seen that, where patients have had a problem, they come into the office to be checked out, and of course the symptoms have resolved, and there's really no way to determine what exactly was going on in many cases. And you have to send a patient on their way, scratching their head and worrying if it's going to happen again. Well, if they can capture things on a camera phone, this can be very helpful. I know that there have been times that I've had to use a camera phone and take a picture of one of my daughters has a rash that crops up quite frequently, but never at the doctor's office, of course. So we go to the pediatrician, and you know, we have this rash that's intermittent and it's associated with some of her other problems, and we finally just took a picture of it. And when we took it in and showed the picture, when the next appointment came up for the specialist, they went, "Oh yeah, that's what you mean. Okay." You know, this is something that can be very helpful, and we should encourage our patients to utilize the tools at hand. And it might be appropriate for you to get involved in setting up some kind of a secure email system where a patient can send a picture by email to the office or to the facility to communicate with you. And it provides them another point of contact, another way to touch base with someone without actually having to take up valuable office time. Today on the tip and trick of the week, we're going to be talking about fluid volume deficit. This is something that we are watching for carefully when we have patients in facilities, tracking INOs, really keeping an eye on how much they're taking in and putting out. But what about just assessing them in between looking at their total INO at the end of a shift? What are we doing to assess a patient, or perhaps look at a patient that we haven't had long enough to track INOs? What do we need to look for a patient who is deficient in fluid volume for any of a number of reasons? So this is going to be a review of some of the assessment tips and recommendations that I might have for you to keep an eye on patients and to just put into your assessment role as you go through the course of a day with a patient, and something to keep an eye on as you interact. So let's move in and talk a little bit about fluid volume deficit and then some of the things that you can use in assessment. Now, first of all, fluid volume deficit is different from simply being dehydrated. A dehydrated patient, we're talking about the loss of the fluid alone, the water alone, and not the electrolytes in solution. So when we're talking about fluid volume deficit, we're talking about a loss of the total fluid volume along with the concurrent electrolytes found in that fluid volume. So we're not talking necessarily about electrolyte imbalances or other imbalances specifically, although they may be occurring. We're talking about fluid volume deficit as a loss of the extracellular fluid present in the body. This can occur for a number of different reasons, and the assessment of this may change depending on the patient's other history. But let's talk a little bit about the general ideas surrounding fluid volume deficit. There are some things that will make a patient at greater risk for going into a fluid volume deficit state. That includes decreased fluid intake. As they stop bringing enough fluid in, it's going to be more difficult for their body to maintain adequate extracellular fluid. Also, patients who are losing fluid more rapidly than normal through cases of excessive sweating and being overheated. Also, patients that have problems with nausea and vomiting or diarrhea will be losing fluids via those routes and become an increased risk for fluid volume deficit. Also remember, there are other reasons for decreased intake than just not having access to fluid. The nausea itself will likely cause them to not feel like drinking anything. I mean, nobody wants to drink something if they know it's coming right back up. So we need to find ways to hydrate our patients when they're not taking enough in. And of course, in a facility, it's a lot easier because we can have initiate IV access and give patients fluids that way. But we may have to be more creative in a home care setting or talking to a patient over the phone. Other risk factors we need to keep an eye on as far as their patient history, any problem with their adrenal output, adrenal insufficiency, diabetes insipidus also, patients with problems with hemorrhaging, any kind of fluid volume loss due to a traumatic injury, internal bleeding, even a GI bleed that you find commonly in many older patients. This can be something that leads over time to a fluid volume deficit. So any indication that they may be losing fluid via the stool should be monitored, and this is a question that can be asked during an assessment. So things we can look for. This could occur quite rapidly in some patients, depending on their age and metabolism and their overall size. But we can see loss of fluid volume just in things like acute weight loss. So are we weighing our patients when they're in the facility on a regular basis to see if they're gaining or losing weight? Also, we should be monitoring the skin turgor. Are we checking that? Now, in elderly patients, that's not necessarily a reliable test as they lose elasticity of their skin, but it is something to keep an eye on and monitor in most patients. Patients who are having decreased urinary output, also highly concentrated urine. What color is the urine? Is it a pale straw color, or are we looking at a deep amber? And these are indications if they have a deeper amber color that they have a more concentrated urine. They may have experienced postural hypotension, patients that experience a sudden dizziness when they stand up, and this is a new occurrence, not something they've experienced before. They may be experiencing this because there's less fluid in the vascular space because the body's compensating, and when they stand up suddenly, it takes a little longer for the body to readjust the vascular system to maintain blood flow to the brain. Again, orthostatic vital signs are a key way to keep an eye on patients that are hypovolemic in the cases of fluid volume deficit. Other problems that you may need to follow up on is that, of course, people with fluid volume deficit, while they are not necessarily experiencing electrolyte imbalances, are likely to be headed that way. And we can monitor lab findings to keep an eye on pending changes in their fluid volume. So again, in addition to our assessment of the patient themselves and looking for things like changes in skin turgor, postural hypotension, concentrated urine, decreased urine output, we can also look at their labs. Some of the lab values that you might lead you to think about fluid volume deficit changes, an increased BUN in relation to a creatinine level. I've seen some numbers, 15 to 1, 20 to 1. So, you know, your BUN is elevated way beyond what your creatinine level is elevated. Also, your hematocrit is increased because, of course, you have now more red blood cells suspended in less blood plasma. And so that, again, will have a higher concentration and a higher number. If they have other things present, such as they are experiencing some kidney problems, losing fluid via the renal route, or perhaps losing fluids because of vomiting or diarrhea, we may see hypokalemia, decreased potassium. Increased potassium would occur with adrenal insufficiency. So those are two different lab values at different ends of that potassium spectrum that will mean different things, but still may point to fluid volume deficit. Decreased sodium levels will occur, and you'll see increased thirst. The patient will be complaining that they're thirsty. They also may be related to an increased ADH, antidiuretic hormone release. And of course, increased sodium levels will be an indicator that there may be something like a diabetes insipidus going on. It also could be pointing to an increase in the loss of fluid through the roots of our increased respiratory rate, Also increase sweating or occasions of diaphoresis in our patients. They can lose a significant amount of fluid in these roots, and that may be an indicator when you have increased sodium levels showing up. If you have a patient that is showing signs of fluid volume deficit, you should be prepared for some basic nursing interventions. These patients are likely to have some kind of a fluid challenge coming in via IV. So if they don't have an IV line in place, they may need one. If we're dealing with someone in a home care setting, we need to find other ways to get fluids on board and fluids that are appropriate to their different other issues. So we'll need to find ways to give them fluid replacement that also replaces nutrients and electrolytes as appropriate. Some of the other things we can look at is that we can make sure that we are adding to our nursing assessments on a per shift basis, perhaps more frequently, something like taking an orthostatic hypotension check by monitoring the patient for an orthostatic set of vital signs. We want to make sure that we're maybe weighing the patient at least once a day, maybe morning and night, to monitor them more carefully. Again, monitoring our labs more frequently and encouraging the patient to take in more fluid and assisting them if they need it. I mean, if we have a patient who is disabled, we may have to go in and hold the cup for them. If they don't have a family member there to help remind them to take a drink, this is going to have to be something that we do when we don't want to necessarily give patients a lot of fluid IV. We want to make sure we can get them to take in fluid orally. It'll make them more comfortable. They won't be experiencing dry mouth, which they're going to have along with the fluid volume deficit problems, and it'll make them more comfortable. It'll encourage them to talk. It'll encourage good nursing interaction with their patients. So I always encourage those kind of things, and I would urge you to do so as well. Just going in and asking them to take a drink, making sure their water's full. You know, if they are used to having something, ice water, and we haven't filled that cup up recently or haven't refilled their pitcher with fresh ice water, no one wants to drink a lukewarm tap water. Get them a fresh pitcher of ice water and they will be much more likely to drink that fluid. So it's something to keep in mind. So that's a brief look at fluid volume deficit. I hope I didn't miss anything, but of course, if I did, you can always get back in touch with me. Send in any comments, questions, suggestions to comments@nursingshow.com, and I look forward to hearing from you for future tips of the week. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week and remind you that we will be back again next week with another episode. In the meantime, I urge you to head over and check out nursingshow.com, where you will find links to all of the information, news items, and other stuff presented here on the show. And I encourage you to follow up on that information. I can present 10 or 15 minutes of general information here on the show, but it is your job to take the additional resources provided, resources that you may have in your home or facility, and take it to the next step and apply it to your own level of nursing practice. I'll do what I can here on the show. It's your job to follow up. Now, that said, if you have any suggestions or corrections or anything that I need to change or update, please get back in touch with me. We want to make sure that the information provided here to the Nursing Show community is the best information possible, and I rely on all of you to help with that. So send in any comments or corrections or suggestions, questions you might have, to comments@nursingshow.com, or you can leave them using the comments link button at the bottom of every single link and article on the Nursing Show site. Just a heads up, next week I'm going to be doing a little bit of traveling, so the Nursing Show is going to come out a day late, sometime late Saturday evening. I apologize for the delay, but I'm not going to be able to have reliable internet access where I am, and I decided to get the show recorded, and I'll just upload it on Saturday evening rather than Friday evening. So the Nursing Show will be there just a day or so late next week. You'll look for it in your email inbox or using your MP3 player. It'll be there Saturday night. Well, that's it for me. I'm going to close out the show as I always do with some good PodSafe music. This is a band we've played here before. You've probably heard it if you've listened to The Nursing Show over the last year and a half or so. This is a song called Tricks by the band Break Lazy. I hope you enjoy it. And if you do, you can check out the links to the music I have in the show notes. In the meantime, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. And please remember, stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
You got some tricks up your sleeve. I think you think I know that. Whoa. A magic spell stands by what you think and mutual lust. A fraction of attraction. Whoa. But we bite our tongues and go on thinking blue. But we bite our tongues and go.